This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, part of the Blue Wire Network. Make sure you guys are searching Blue Wire, checking out Blue Wire Buckets and all the other great shows we have. With you today, we have a really good show as well. I have today my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's your boy. I figured out how to turn my camera onto widescreen mode. So it doesn't look much better as my more exposed office is or my empty office is even more exposed, but I'm not eating up 97% of the frame, so I think on balance it's a win.
I think it looks a lot better.
Thanks,
more widescreen,
babe.
More widescreen 2K19
widescreen season.
With us today we have a very, very special guest from The Athletic, our boy Dave Dufour, favorite guest of our listeners. How's it going, Dave?
You know how many podcasts I go on and they tell me, oh, you are back by popular demand, people keep clamoring for you to come around, you're the best guest we've ever had, wow, you're a beautiful man, you're the best looking person that's ever been on this podcast feed. Gosh, I mean, I can't even list all of them. It's so,
yeah, humble too.
So many.
Humble
too. Well, I'm just telling you what other people have told me.
There's something. There's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of negativity in the blog game. And I think it's good. It's good that you are aware of how beloved you are, Dave, because it's really, really appreciated to have you on. Before we dive into this, two things I want to address. First of all, I want to send out well wishes from the podcast to Dan Gilbert and the Gilbert family. That's a really, really scary situation. I just lost my uncle to a stroke last month. So I definitely know how scary that can be. The other thing, Dave, I need your take. This is now what going to be what we do every single podcast leading up to the draft. I need your take on Cam Reddish, because you told us to not hate on Colin Sexton, to give it time and believe in him. We're not the biggest fans of Cam Reddish at five.
Okay.
We're not. So I need your take on him.
But how did I do on Colin?
You did pretty well. That's why I value your opinion. That's why we value your opinion.
So here's what I'll say about Cam Reddish. Cam needs a good environment, needs a strong coach, needs a strong system, I think. He needs a coach that's going to hold him accountable. He needs teammates that are going to hold him accountable. All of the pieces are there.
Right.
He's a good athlete. He's got some issues with his shooting form. That's going to need work. In theory, he can shoot, right? Like, he's a theoretical 3-and-D guy. If he puts it together – wow, that's a really good player. Maybe, you know, potentially an all-star if it all gets put together. I don't know that it's going to get put together.
Okay, there it is.
That's where I'm at.
There she blows.
There's the truth. I mean, to me, my big thing is I don't think he's going to be a bust, but I think you're probably looking at like a 3-and-D guy, kind of like a Marvin Williams type. And that's nice. It's just not exactly what I'd want at five, especially with how high I am on Jarrett Culver. Or even DeAndre Hunter. Like, I think one of those guys fits just way better for the Cavs.
I wonder if the Cavs, I mean, they've really killed it with their moves this whole season. I wonder if they can't convince some team to sell low on a guy that maybe they're just, like, off of. Like, could they trade number five for Josh Jackson?
No, what are you doing?
Why do you want to do that?
Well, hold on. I think Josh Jackson's better than Cam Reddish.
Yeah, I guess maybe. I don't know. My thing is, first off, I'm.
Now, by the way, Josh Jackson's the first guy that popped in my head.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Like D'Angelo Russell would have been a good candidate two seasons ago.
Well, I mean, as much as Justin can probably, relate to people who are trying to get into the club or into a VIP area and aren't allowed, I don't know if Josh Jackson's the guy. But yeah, I don't know.
Who among us?
Yeah. Who among us hasn't been left out?
By the way, I'm gonna take this opportunity to shit on my least favorite form of person in the world, which is the club bouncer. Because
oh my goodness.
Because here's the thing about going to those kinds of bars. I don't want to anyway. I only go to those places if I'm dragged along by my significant other or my particularly bro-y friends. So,
and when you're wearing your team-issued half-zip?
Oh, when I wear my team-issued half-zip. So,
well, then you'd have no problem getting
in. I have no problem getting in. And all the ladies would be all over me.
If you're wearing that, you don't even need to go in the club. You stand outside the club, and then the women in line just audition at that point to be esquired for a drink.
Scout by Justin. But my overall gripe here is that I don't want the bouncer's approval, yet I have to ask for it. And that is, I don't like that because I don't even like them. And I have to be like, hey, man, how's it going? And I'm just in such a bad mood the whole time. But to actually circle back to this point about the drafting Reddish and whether that is kind of the right move for the Cavs to go, it feels like if the Cavs are being smart, because, you know, our good friend Trevor Magnotti, who we had on last week, kind of talked about how if the Cavs have actual realistic expectations for Culver, then he might be a really nice role player, a guy who can shoot a little bit if he figures it out, has good defensive switchability. But it's like, if that's what you're looking for, I have a nice Hunter there for you at five already. Like, like, isn't he just a better version of what you hope Reddish is going to be, Dave?
Probably. Yeah, because he's ready to go. But the issue is, that, I mean, the timeline of this team, right? Like, they're not going to be good for, you know, when's LeBron coming back?
Oh,
2022, I think.
So, but we'll already be coming off a conference finals run. That's going to inspire him
to come back
for the victory.
Right. But LeBron's going to be Karl Malone then with the Lakers.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, they're not going to be good for like four or five more seasons potentially.
Man, it's going to come full circle where LeBron chapter three is going to be like Shaq's chapter in Cleveland. But obviously, we're a ways away from that. We'll see what happens. My personal take is I don't think the Cavs are staying with their picks. I don't think they're staying with 5 and 26 either. They're trading up with 26. They're trading back with 5. They're trading up with 5. We'll see what happens there. It's going to be really interesting. But I think we're also really early in the process. We haven't really gone into all the workouts, and it's hard to say who's going to impress, who kind of feels like they're going to fit into the team culture, because the Cavs do seem to be trying to build a culture and try to build an identity. You see that with Colin Sexton and these other guys that have a really strong work ethic.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and don't forget, they've got Kevin Love. They've got J.R. Smith's expiring.
Yep.
They're going to have cap space, so they're going to be able to take on some other team's bad contract, potentially with more years, and possibly get another first-round pick, maybe not this year, but next year.
Right.
So they actually have a ton of flexibility. Like, this is – if you're going to be a bad team, this is a good position to be in.
Yeah.
They have plenty of assets and tons of flexibility financially. So, you know, despite the desert of assets that were left behind LeBron, they've done really, really well to recover themselves. Like, I think they'll probably be in the playoffs in like three seasons. Like,
I'm going to take the under.
Yeah, Justin's like, Justin is such a big fan of this team right now. I'm just not there yet.
Yeah.
Remember, Atlanta's going to make the playoffs next year.
Fair.
Right. They're really good. They had a stretch there where they were probably the best offense in the league.
Do you think they're going to take Culver when they trade 8 and 10 for 5?
I think actually, you know, they might take Culver or Hunter, you know, whoever's there. They're looking for somebody who's ready to play.
Right.
Because the guys that they have can already play. Herter can play. Obviously, Trey Young is special. John Collins is fantastic. They're Atlanta is super interesting to me among the teams that missed the playoffs. It's funny because they should have gotten the number one pick.
Would have been way cooler.
Oh, there's right. Now should have, eh? They're deserved in all this.
If we're awarding it based on merit, right?
Mm-hmm.
They tried to win every single game and got better as the season progressed. Okay. And played themselves out of better lottery position because they got better. I would have loved to seen them.
Yeah, I think they were tops on my list for
I'm
premier.
Cool with New Orleans having them.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be fun.
I'm
glad it went to a team that wasn't tanking, that was trying to shut down Anthony Davis and all their other guys.
Well, no, they were tanking.
I'm glad the Lakers got it after they shut down LeBron. They clearly weren't tanking.
Everybody was tanking, by the way, except for, like, Atlanta.
Yeah, Dave, luckily, it was really important to me because I remember I was really in my feelings the day after the lotto. And like about how much I hated the new reform. And I was like, Dave, tell me if I'm crazy, because is it just because I'm mad? Is that why I'm upset? Is it because I'm upset that the Cavs didn't get a good pick?
You were
right there with me.
Yeah. No. But this didn't fix tanking. It probably made it worse. And I do think if you want to fix tanking there, like if you're going to keep a lottery, every team has to be in the lottery, unweighted odds. That's the only way to fix tanking with a lottery. That's it.
Yeah, so I mean, 30, and then you'd have teams tanking out of the 8 spot, by the way. Oh, all 30, oh, no, yeah. Yeah, all 30. 30. Yeah.
Everyone is in the lottery, unweighted, completely random.
Man, I just got compared to Tony Stark.
Oh, yeah, I love that, yeah. Thanks, Conrich.
But dead Tony Stark.
Yeah. Well,
spoiler alert, bro.
Before any character growth, Tony Stark.
Listen, if you haven't seen it by now, you're not seeing it.
Yeah, I do think have this theory that... Thrones season 8 was the end of the avoiding spoilers society. We just stopped. Everyone just gave up.
There were people, basketball Twitter people, during a playoff game posting video from the episode of major moments as it was happening while there's a basketball game on.
Yeah, it's over, man. We lost.
Savage. Just savage. Listen, they suspended Rex Chapman's account because I don't know why. But they should have
because he's friends with Michael Rapaport.
Well, they should have done it, and I like Rex, but they should have done it when he posted the freaking mountain, the Clegane Bowl, in the middle of the Portland Golden State game. Or
that's
whatever.
On you for watching that series.
No, I'm saying, you don't watch Game of Thrones?
No, I meant Blazers.
Yeah, it meant Blazers Warriors.
Listen, Carter, some of us have jobs here in basketball.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Full Time. Well, you know, I think that as much as everyone tuned in to hear us talk about the Atlanta Hawks and a 3-week-old episode of Game of Thrones no one liked, we probably should talk about the NBA Finals, which gets started on Thursday.
Yeah, especially because we're in a post-spoiler society, and Dave knows what's going to happen. He knew Colin Sexton was going to take a leap. He knows what's going on. He's in the know. That's why he's a paid professional. So that's why we're previewing the finals with him.
I have been awful.
He's going to tell us why the Raptors are going to win in 6.
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen? I'm asking for a prediction now. I don't see the value in waiting to the end.
Yeah. I have Warriors in 6.
Okay.
And I think it could be 5 if KD comes back and is healthy. I think Toronto is going to win Game 1. And we're going to have a couple of days of, they have the Warriors number. And then it's just going to get shut down. So the Warriors are coming off 9 days off. That's a really long time. It's funny because Magic Johnson was talking about this. And like when he can talk about some actual like basketball stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't about necessarily the league, but just general basketball ideas. Like, it's pretty clear that this guy understands what he's talking about.
Yeah,
I think if he was ever a player, I think he'd be a pretty high IQ.
Yeah, he'd probably be okay. And 9 days off is such a long time. That, you know, we know that these guys, like, this is year 5 of this title run.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we know they're probably not scrimmaging hard in practice, although apparently they did have a scrimmage and Boogie Cousins looked good, which, by the way, not good for them.
No. Like,
playing Boogie makes them worse.
Yeah.
Doesn't playing Boogie, sorry to cut you off, but doesn't playing Boogie just make it easier for Toronto to play Marcus Gasol?
Yes.
Like, I feel if Toronto, if you're giving Boogie 15, 20 minutes and you're playing Kevon Looney, let's say 10, those are 30 minutes right there that Marc Gasol can play. And I think that's a huge net positive for the Warriors.
And it also puts
Gust, but I, at least at the beginning, I don't think that's going to work out well for them.
It also puts two attackable defenders on the floor for the Warriors. I know everyone always talks about how Steph is very underrated as a defender. And as much as Cavs fans might chafe at that, they're right. But he is someone who you'd rather go at than Klay Thompson or Iggy. And, you know, if you want to run some pick and roll, that really nice dance two-man game between Lowry and Gasol, I'm much happier running that at those two.
But if Boogie's on the court, though, he can't guard Gasol because you can't have him, you know, 25 feet from the basket guarding Gasol, because we saw Gasol with the little pump and go. I mean, he was destroying Brook Lopez with that. So what ends up happening is you have Boogie trying to guard Siakam.
In transition will be a bloodbath.
Yep, and you have Draymond guarding Gasol. This is a series. If they play Boogie, they have to play him as the backup, and then he maybe 10 minutes. Just like, okay, we got to give Steph and Klay have to be off the court for like 8 minutes together in this game. Yep. Boogie's going to go in there. We're going to slow it down. We're going to run things through Boogie on offense, and we're going to try to tread water on defense, meaning it would be Boogie, Draymond, Iguodala, I'm assuming McKinney and Quinn Cook.
Yeah.
If I was just throwing it out there. But I think for the Warriors, listen, we know what works for them. Go small. Just go small early and often. If the Warriors just would run their best five as much as they can, they could end this in five without KD.
Okay.
But
yeah, and well, here's the thing. We learned in 2016 that Steve Kerr has some hesitation when it comes to limiting the rotation. He fully believes in the strength and numbers thing. And my big thing is I'm a little worried. I'm a little concerned because even against the Bucks, there were stretches where Toronto just was afraid to shoot. Like they will always look for the perfect shot, and you can't do that against the Warriors. You have to take good shots when they're available. Marc Gasol can't hesitate. That's something that was mentioned in our Twitch chat as well, is what happens if Marc Gasol refuses to shoot. Now, the one thing I think Boogie could provide them with some offense, but I think Marc Gasol's defense, especially if Boogie isn't in the best shape of his life coming off that injury, I think he's going to do a really good job of limiting him and shutting him down. He did a very good job against Vucevic. He did a very good job against Joel Embiid. And I think that that's a matchup that favors them. But if Marc Gasol isn't testing the Warriors at all on the other end of the floor, then again, you're starting to get into, is Kawhi doing everything on his own? Because if Kawhi's doing everything on his own, I think Iguodala defending him with Draymond providing help, that's going to wear him down. That's going to wear him down over the course of a 7-game series, the same way the Warriors defense wears down James Harden over the course of
right.
Here's
they have three guys they can throw at him.
Yeah.
Sorry, Carter. Go ahead.
Here's just a general question that I'm still trying to figure out, because I think this question will actually determine how interesting the series ends up being from a competitive standpoint. Is this going to be an ugly series? Because if it's ugly, I think the Raptors have a real chance.
Well, I mean, their defense certainly has the potential to make it ugly. And if they defend like they did against the Bucks, it could be. Like, the key to that Bucks series for them was limiting transition opportunities for Toronto. They weren't letting Giannis get ahead of steam. And I've described this, you know, against the Bucks, the goal in transition is to cut off the dunk. You got to cut off the lane, and you just don't want to leave the trailing shooters wide open. Well, with Golden State, it's the inverse, right? You want to defend the lane, but you can't leave Steph and Klay wide open. And so it's a different thing, but they have the bodies to do it. They have Pascal Siakam. They have Danny Green, who might be the best transition guard defender in the history of the league.
He is so good. I love it.
They've got Kawhi Leonard. I mean, Kyle Lowry is going to do every single thing in his power to stop you from getting, you know, what you want. And Ibaka can run the floor. So they have the bodies to do it. It's just that, you know, Steph Curry is the best player in basketball and Klay Thompson is the second best shooter in history. The first best shooter is Steph Curry, right? Like those are almost insurmountable issues. And I don't know, like they're going to struggle to guard those guys. Danny Green is the way I would do it is I would throw Danny Green on Steph Curry and I would have Kyle Lowry on Klay. Because Kyle Lowry, you can't post him up. And that's where Klay really gets an advantage because he's decent in the post. And I would – Danny's length has bothered Steph Curry in the past. I mean, this is like right out of the Spurs playbook. You take Kawhi and you put him on Draymond, and you use him to disrupt passing lanes. He can come over and help because you're not worried about Draymond shooting threes. Every three Draymond shoots, even when he makes them, that's a victory for the defense.
Yeah.
And then you've got Siakam, who you can – either stick on the center or you can stick on Iguodala. Either way, someone they don't have to guard. Yeah, this is the thing about them missing KD is that you only have two guys you have to worry about now.
Yeah, it's who can shoot, right? And that's the kind of nice thing is that I feel like people are maybe just a little bit overrating this Warriors squad because they took a weird win against a Houston team that is prone to very weird losses. Yeah. And then they beat probably the worst conference finalist since Utah beat the We Believe Warriors in 2007.
Wasn't that second round?
No, they beat them to make the Western Conference Finals. So the point is, I do think that there are things to exploit defensively against this Warriors offense. I do like the idea of putting Danny Green on Steph because the other thing that does is it puts Lowry on Klay Thompson. And if I'm the Raptors, a big part of my defensive game plan is trying to bait this team into post-ups. Because they're especially post-ups to score, not to pass.
Right.
The Cavs did in 2016 with Kyrie Irving.
Houston did it last year. Because Houston started this thing early last year where they weren't trying to switch their guards out of post-ups. And everyone thought it was weird. I was like, no, Boston... So when Boston had Isaiah Thomas, the Wizards got their whole game plan got thrown out the window because they were trying to post up Isaiah the whole time. The difference is these guys are stout. Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Isaiah Thomas, Kyle Lowry. Like you're not just going to back them down.
No.
Not without fouling.
And not without Kevin Durant more specifically.
Right. So to do those post ups totally throws off your offense. And I'm with you, man. If the Warriors start posting up, that works in Toronto's favor. It also slows the game down, and you don't have these guys running off screens as much. Danny Green's not going to be as exhausted. Maybe he'll hit a couple threes.
Yeah, I'm cool with as many Klay 12-foot turnarounds as he'll take. And if he gets hot, that's just a thing I'm willing to accept because that's so much better than anything that than Steph running off baseline for a three and relocating and everything stops moving. It takes another shooter off the 3-point line, by the way, which the Warriors are suddenly in very short supply of. So I really think that the Warriors can do a lot of interesting stuff. And the Raptors can do a lot of interesting stuff on defense. And I do think it starts with putting Kawhi on Draymond Green, because if there's one thing that the Warriors did find again, it was that Steph Dre pick and roll that was pretty unstoppable against the Blazers, and feels like Raptors have the best setup to defuse that.
But they only ran it in the fourth quarter. And I'll tell you right now, that's Steve Kerr's game. They could be down 15 in the middle of the third, and you are not going to see a Steph and Draymond pick and roll until like 7 minutes left in the fourth. It's just that's how he's going to coach it. And as maddening as that is, that's just the reality of the situation.
Want more great NBA content? This is Jason Pat, co-host of the Cash Considerations podcast. Check out my podcast and other NBA podcasts on the network by searching Blue Wire on iTunes, Spotify, and other podcast players.
So two things. One, our Twitch feed is not very happy, Dave, about your comment about Steph being the best player in the league.
That's fine.
Stunner.
That's brave. Yeah. I'm I'm still, I think he's the most important player on the Warriors. I don't think he's the best player on the Warriors. One of my concerns
what's the best offense in NBA history? Steph Curry shooting 100 times.
I was going to say the 2017 Cavs, but okay.
Listen, hey, Kevin Durant's fantastic. Here's the deal. Kevin Durant is awesome. And Kevin Durant on 29 other teams is so much more important, right?
Right.
Than he is for the Warriors. And that's where a lot of this comes from, because it is about context. You know, I refuse to talk about basketball without taking in the context of it. And in the context of the league, is the way it works right now, Steph Curry is the most dangerous weapon. He's a thermonuclear weapon. Now, part of that is occasionally he might not hit shots. That's where KD gets a lot of credit from me. He can 8-point you to death, 8 points a quarter from now until he's 40 years old. I have no doubt
he
can do it.
Yeah.
But Steph Curry can do it. You know, he can put up a 30-point quarter and it's no big deal.
Yeah. And I kind of went off on this pretty recently on the Blue Wire Buckets podcast, which you guys should all subscribe to. The Blue Wire Network's kind of it's bi-weekly, right, Justin? Or twice a week wrap up of NBA
three times
news.
A week.
Oh,
three
we're
times
up to three
during the playoffs. I don't know what we're doing during finals, but
I'm a terrible ambassador for the brand.
Yeah. But, I was going to say this is a great plug before you start going factually incorrect.
But I kind of ranted about this. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. I did kind of rant about this on the last time I was on that podcast, which is about how people were discussing whether the Warriors need Kevin Durant. And it's like, need is a really funny word. Like, they need him to become completely unbeatable in any context. But, like, people will go, oh, they need him because, you know, teams can switch on them more and gum up their offense if he's not there. It's like, yeah, every team in NBA history has had a counter that limited them to some extent. Then they had to figure out how to work through it. Like, that's not what need is.
Yeah.
No. That's turning the game into easy mode. Yeah. And I do think there is an opportunity for the Raptors to upset the Warriors here, especially if Durant misses more than two games, or when he does come back, he's limited. And all of a sudden, he's playing a little bit of iso ball. It throws off the rhythm of the team. I also think, as Dave mentioned before, them having 9 days off is going to kind of throw things off, because they haven't really played competitive basketball in a really long time.
Like 3 weeks.
Well, exactly. And I know Portland went up 17 in the last three of those games, but that was a really – Portland was so terribly designed after the injuries that they went through, both to Lillard and Nurkic, to really challenge the Warriors. You have a very poor defensive backcourt. You had no real rim protection. It was just a very advantageous situation. So I think that if Toronto capitalizes, which is going to be the big thing, could lead to an upset, especially if KD is limited or misses three games or even the entirety of the series. We don't know with him because he hasn't been practicing. One question I want to ask, though, is, are we now counting on Kyle Lowry to play really well in the series? Because I think he's going to need to step up in a way offensively that he hasn't always done. Like, I think his best quality is he's a floor general. He plays the game the right way. When he's on the court, he's always making a positive impact. Even if he's not scoring any points, he makes a positive impact. But part of me wonders if he's going to need to take on a little bit more of a scoring load just so that they have that reliable second option. Because against Milwaukee, it was a different player every game, but someone stepped up. Like, whether it was Pascal Siakam one night, whether it was Fred VanVleet another night, they were always getting somebody. And I think against the Warriors, you need a little bit more reliability. And even though Kyle Lowry played great against Milwaukee and he outplayed Eric Bledsoe, we've also seen Terry Rozier outplay Eric Bledsoe in a series. And that didn't work out so well the next round. So I'm not sure if I'm all the way in on Lowry. If I was, I think I'd have more confidence in picking an upset.
Well, I mean, this is the big problem for Toronto. It's not the defense. The defense is going to be fine. It's the offense. Can you score? Like, we know that the Warriors are going to score. No matter how good your defense is, we know the Warriors are still going to put points up. It's about, you know, you got to stop those 45-point quarter explosions. And I think that the Raptors can do that. Mm-hmm. But can the Raptors score 30 in a quarter?
Right.
No, I don't think they can. Fred VanVleet just had the most ridiculous bench player run.
He turned into Steph. He turned into Steph. Really, it was hilarious.
But now part of that is Milwaukee. They give up wide open threes. Mm-hmm. He happened to get hot, and there you go. Well, Golden State's not going to do that. They're going to run you off the line. Like Golden State, they're going to come out and defend. Like we saw what they did to Dame and CJ in that series. By the way, all due respect to the Portland Trailblazers, but to lose three games in a row after you've been up 17 points shows you just how serious the Warriors ever took them. The Warriors only wanted to play one quarter a game. Yeah, that's true. It. And so, you know, like people keep telling me, well, the Warriors, you know, they might be they might have a couple of weak spots because, look, they got down 17. They got down 17 because they just did not care.
Okay. Yeah.
Take that narrative. Just erase that series.
Okay.
Completely. Do we have to think about the Houston series? You got to really think about the last two games against Houston.
But is that flip switching behavior?
It's terrible.
Like, I feel like this is going to be another case of the Warriors need to beat themselves.
Right.
And I think that when you have those habits, I'm just someone that believes that that could come back and bite them.
Oh, Steph Curry is for sure in game one flipping a behind the back pass and hitting what's his name? The super fan, the Toronto super fan.
Nav. Yeah.
He's going to hit Nav, or he's going to hit Drake with this pass, and it's going to be all over SportsCenter. That is going to happen in crunch time of game one.
Yeah.
For sure.
Honestly, I really hope if KD does come back, I'm going to be interested to see if Drake gets in his head the same way that he got in Giannis's head.
He didn't give a damn about no Drake night.
Giannis was 100% rattled by Drake, and it was really funny to me.
The free throws.
Yeah, that was yikes.
Unbelievable. And I think KD's sensitive enough where he can get worked up by Drake, and especially if he's not at 100% physically and he's a little frustrated with himself because he holds himself to a high standard. If all of a sudden he's missing a couple of shots and you got Drake just kind of droning on in your ear from the sideline, that's going to be really funny to me. Hopefully Drake goes into his huddle and just starts massaging his shoulders. That would crack me up.
Go ahead. Oh, I wasn't gonna keep responding to that. So this is tough. You had a follow-up.
I was just gonna talk about KD. Here's my thing about KD. If KD comes back, it means he's healthy. You know, the Warriors aren't gonna put him out there unless he's ready.
Nor is he probably gonna want to.
I don't think he's playing.
I think it doesn't feel like it's very close.
I've heard that the injury is worse. I mean, me and everyone else, by the way, like I'm not breaking any news here.
Right. No, that talk is definitely out there.
Right. But I have heard that it's worse than initially reported, which makes so much sense. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Warriors don't want it to get all crazy. Also, you might want the Raptors to worry that he might show up.
Right. No, absolutely.
That's the real benefit of a strain, by the way, because it's like a strain is just a marginal tear of the muscle, right? So
right.
It's like anything can be a strain, and severity really matters here. So they can be like, oh yeah, it's a strain. He's working on coming back. Like, you know, there's like, it's not as like definitive as like he tore his ACL. He's not playing.
Right.
If I knew KD wasn't playing, and if I also knew that Kawhi Leonard was at 100% health, I think I would have a lot more confidence in picking an upset. But I just have a tremendous amount of respect for how good Draymond Green is defensively.
Yep.
And I think if KD isn't playing, there is the potential for like a Draymond Finals MVP.
He should be the favorite.
Kawhi. Yeah, I think if he takes Kawhi out of the series,
this is Justin just prepping to not give Steph another Finals MVP.
Am I that transparent?
Oh yeah, you are.
I think Draymond should be the favorite going in. I mean, if you watch that Portland series, I thought he was the most important player.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they did get down, like Draymond is a guy who he's actually trying the whole game, especially right now. He's healthy and in shape.
Especially after he dropped the 30 pounds there. So
yeah.
I don't think he's been trying all year, but he seems to give a shit now.
Remember, he was injured, right? Like that shoulder injury actually hampered him quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I think it hampered his conditioning as well. We all know he likes to hit the elliptical. He likes to drag the elliptical and the bicycle into the sauna. And you know, he wasn't able to do that with the shoulder. So, you know, give the man a break. But I think that Draymond should be a favorite. I mean, his contribution is not going to just be what he does on the offensive end. I mean,
right.
It's very likely he'll average a triple-double during this series.
Mm-hmm.
But with that defense that he has, I mean, it's just – that is invaluable to that team. Now, if Steph Curry is at 30 points a game or 36 or whatever he had against Portland, please just give it to Steph. Just so that narrative can stop. Like, the guy's one of the best to ever play.
Yeah. See, that now that's the most controversial thing you've said on the podcast.
That he's one of the best to ever play?
No. That narrative needs to die. I want to keep that going on.
Yeah, forever. Yeah. Again, do you know our listeners, Dave? One thing that I'm interested in. One thing I am interested in, schematically, and well, not even schematically. It's more about the execution. We saw the Raptors play excellent half-court defense in that last series against the Bucks. But the Bucks didn't make it that hard on them. I didn't feel like they put Giannis in a lot of great spots. It was kind of the same collapse and the same four rotations, rinse, repeat, almost every possession over and over and over again. Do you think there's going to be a bit of a shock going up against an offense that's as fluid and dynamic as the Warriors?
I think that when you've got Steph and Klay, you're not going to be able to drop into a pseudo zone.
Yeah.
Right? Because you actually have to worry about them. I will say Kerr likes to run this one lineup with just Klay or with just Steph so that they're like the only shooter on the court. You may see some zone stuff. Toronto's been running a zone on and on like all year, like against teams that can't shoot. Boston, I think they did a little bit against Brooklyn. They did a little bit against Detroit. Teams that struggled to shoot the ball, they would actually zone up. I don't think we'll see a ton of it because of those two and how they operate. Mm-hmm. But you know that they can actually – they have a functional half-court offense. Whereas, you know, Milwaukee, their offense was a hammer. And it just wasn't going to work. I mean, you know, they literally just kept swinging that hammer and weren't going to break the wall. Like, guys just weren't hitting shots, and it doesn't help you. So with the Warriors, that's not an issue. They're not going to do the same thing over and over and over again. You're not going to just get Steph and Draymond pick and roll all day long, right? Like, it's going to be – you're going to get variance. You're going to get – like, they're actually going to mix things up. And, you know, they got more than one ball handler, too.
That's I have a lot of confidence in the Warriors offense. It's kind of a sentiment that I've seen travel on Warriors Twitter, and maybe this is a straw man argument, but I see a lot of them kind of concerned about the offense without KD. Just over the course of a 7-game series against Toronto's defense, that if they're going to lose, it's going to be a result of their offense and not their defense. And I kind of think it's flipped. Like, I have enough confidence in Steph, Draymond, Klay, and the pieces that they have that they're going to be able to score reliably. But I think Golden State, when they're fully healthy and fully committed, their defense is at a very high level. But I think if Kevin Durant is out of the equation, Andre Iguodala is coming back from an injury. He's probably going to be healthy, but he's not the same Andre Iguodala that he used to be. I don't know. Is their defensive ceiling higher or without Kevin Durant than Milwaukee and Philadelphia's? Like, is this the worst defense the Raptors have played in the last three rounds?
It's an interesting question.
That is a really good question, actually. Yes and no. I think because Toronto goes so ISO heavy, it actually is.
Okay.
Right? So the guys that they get to throw at Kawhi, you know, they're going to throw Iguodala, they're going to throw Draymond, they're going to throw Klay, might be the three best defenders that they've had to face as far as isolation defenders.
Mm-hmm.
But the Warriors defense isn't great that way. Like, what makes them great is that when they switch, they can cover, but you're not going to switch much when it's just Kawhi out there.
Yeah. When it's ISO ball. Now, do you put Iguodala on Kawhi or do you put Klay?
I think that you probably, hang on 1 second. I'm having an emergency at my house. Apparently. Hold on.
No worries. We'll fill.
We will absolutely filibuster. What would you do, Carter?
I don't know, man. I feel like I just want to put Iggy on Kawhi because he's really much more craft right now than he is explosive athleticism.
Yeah.
That's just like not really that's not what he's able to do, especially while he's hampered. So to me, it just feels like that's going to be the way they would go. And then you can kind of put Clay on Lowry if you want. Like, I think really that would be a really smart move.
I think you'll get Clay on Lowry, and this is where you're going to see the difference between Clay on Kyrie, who was able to create those shots and take tough shots, and Lowry, which I think he's just going to make the right play with Clay on him.
Yeah, and which he did against Philly a lot, and it just led to Kawhi going pure ISO all. Oh, the bupper.
Oh, man.
What happened, Dave?
Dave just brought a pup.
Yeah, sorry. Apparently my dogs got into a fight.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Well, this dude just doesn't quite understand the world yet.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. This isn't... For those listening back to the audio on the podcast, you just missed out on a very, very
good
bupper.
What a beautiful.
That was 100% a very good boy.
Oh. Well,
he's working on it.
He's a good boy.
Yeah. I mean, he's a 7 month old dog. balls have to go, though.
But, yeah. Yeah. We're having similar discussions in the Rodriguez household about Todd.
Yeah. We're having some, it's weird, man, because it's not like all the time.
But every now and again,
when a good pup loses its balls, I equate that to Kevin Durant going to Golden State.
When the blood really gets flowing.
That's actually the first time ever.
Oh, that's
in
all right.
The thousands of hours that I've recorded that I've had to say, oh, wait, something's happening in my house.
Well, you were bragging about receiving compliments from everybody else that this is just another run-of-the-mill appearance for you and nothing special, that's Mr. It. Paid Professional. And now we get your first-time experience. So there you go.
Some of us have a job. Oh. We were actually just talking about whether they'll put Clay on Lowry. What do you think about that?
I think that'll probably happen. I think you'll see Steph on Danny Green to start. Just the typical Warriors thing. And so you'll have Iguodala on Kawhi, and then you have Draymond as the help guy.
Yeah.
That's
pretty good. That's pretty good.
And they're going to be okay. If Looney doesn't start game one, you know where Steve Kerr's head is. And this is sort of the conversation that always surrounds the Warriors. Like, you talk about the Warriors beating themselves. A lot of times I do think it is because they start out in disadvantageous positions by starting like Damian Jones and letting him pick up three fouls in the first 4 minutes of the game. Right. Like stuff like that.
Strength in numbers, bro. Andy Varejao in the fourth quarter of game 7.
Thank you. If that doesn't happen, I don't think they lose that series.
Maybe not. Yeah. He got maybe absolutely not. Roasted.
Although, let's be fair. Varejao did win them game 4.
Oh, that was so brutal. He made like three amazing plays.
Sure. So I'm not taking away one without the other. And also, the one time that they didn't start in a disadvantageous – oh, my God, I can't speak.
The one time
they started the death lineup, Tristan Thompson beat it out of them. He made them play – Varejao. So that was a very, very fun occurrence. But yeah, my concern, Dave, which I mentioned when you're gone, is with Clay on Lowry, I just think that's going to bait Lowry into making the right play rather than forcing a shot against Clay. And I think if you're getting passive Lowry and good team player Lowry all the time, I don't know if Toronto's going to be able to generate enough offense.
Yeah, that's where you're going to need Lowry to, like, mimic Steph a little bit. Give the ball up and relocate, but relocate looking to shoot. There have been times during this playoffs where Lowry and Gasol and Siakam all just did not want to shoot the basketball. And say what you will about Danny Green. Look, Danny Green, he hurt his ankle, and it's been a rough go since then. I don't know if it's the ankle that's affecting him or if he's just cold, but the guy is still shooting, and there is a value to that. And so not wanting to shoot and not shooting is just inexcusable. Lowry, Siakam, and Gasol have to take shots. They have to be aggressive about taking those open shots because the windows aren't going to be there. The Warriors are going to run them off the three-point line. You've got to shoot them when you got them. And I think Lowry, like you said, you need Lowry to give you like 18 to 21 a game.
Similar to this series, if they put Clay on him, like, you know, we talk about how he needs to take shots when they're there. I mean, against the Sixers, they often weren't there because they had a 6'10 Ben Simmons on him. Now, Clay isn't 6'10, but he does have a ton of length. I'm worried about his ability just to generate shots, let alone take the ones that are there.
I mean, Kyle Lowry's not going to get off a shot.
He's
against
not.
Klay Thompson.
He's not Kyrie Irving.
Right. He's not. He's not going to shake. Yeah. Klay. He's gonna. It's all going to have to be coming off pin downs. Maybe in a little bit of pick and roll, he'll be able to get some shots off, transition, things like that. But again, the Warriors are so good defensively.
That's why they're bagging them to play boogie.
Yeah.
Dude. Oh my God, man. The Raptors should be like flying boogie slander all over the team hotel for the Warriors. I mean, you got to do something.
Yeah.
I just think that, again, I think Warriors are going to go win in six because I think the Raptors will steal one, and then it probably goes 3-1, and then the Raptors win, you know, game five because they don't care.
Here's a question for you before, because we're running low on time here, but here's a question. Because obviously you're picking the Warriors. What percent chance would you give the Raptors to win? Because I'm at like a I think I might end up picking the Raptors on this series just because I do like so many of the things they can do on defense. And I want to see this Warriors offense stress tested against a team that's actually schematically capable of messing with it. But I would put it around like a 51%. Like, I think it's a real, like, my confidence level is real low.
Are you picking the Raptors right now? 51% means you think the Raptors are winning.
Carter 538 Rodriguez.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking I will. I think I'm going to. But I'd like to hear what percent you would give the Raptors to win.
A good point that the Raptors, in theory at least, are switchable.
Yeah,
right? They can run that lineup with Ibaka at center, and they're super switchy.
Yeah,
it's just that how many of those guys you trust in a switch?
I think how many Warriors players right now do you trust to hurt them in a switch? Less I'd than usual.
Yeah. So one less than usual. I don't know, man. I think I'd give them about a 35% chance.
That's a pretty good chance. Yeah. Like, even though you're picking the Warriors in five or six, that's a non-zero chance.
This is not last year's Cavs team that really like just didn't have a hope.
Yeah.
This team actually does have the personnel to potentially beat them.
Yeah. You know, I agree. I think personally, I put it about a 40% chance. Now,
which is not that far off from my 51, by the way.
I'm probably 11%. I'm definitely higher than Dave. But now I want us all to say whether you believe the percentage chance that Kawhi Leonard stays is higher or lower than the line set by your Raptors chances.
Oh.
So I said Dave, 50. Do you think it's a higher percent chance? Do you think there's more than a 35% chance that Kawhi stays?
No, I think there's like a 5% chance.
Oh, man. But also, what if they win?
What if they win?
You think he'll leave if they win?
I think he can. I think he can leave if he wins.
I think he can leave.
He can do whatever. I just find that surprising. I know he's a robot, but man.
Get that new balance.
He doesn't make his own decisions.
I will say lower. So maybe I'm a hypocrite.
So even if they win, I think he's probably going to leave.
I'm comfortable at a cool 40%, 35% stay.
I hate speculating about this right now.
Who gives a shit? we're morons.
Yeah, exactly. No one's listening to us. We're fine. It's
true. I'm watching us lose. We're losing viewers right now.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Hemorrhaging. Well,
they, like Kawhi, are leaving. So we'll hopefully we get a good finals. Hopefully we get at least someone other than Steph winning finals MVP, because that would frustrate Dave. And frustrated Dave provides us with good content.
Always.
Dave, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to everyone that was watching live and abandoned us after the Kawhi speculation. Thank you to all our supporters. Remember, if you want to support the show, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. And if you want to be part of our Discord chat, send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We will continue our coverage leading up to the draft and then cry when we draft Cam Reddish. So thanks to Dave. Thanks to Karin. Thank you to all our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.
Love you. Bye.